Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Sam Pets Radio, Australia's coolest podcast network.
Hey everybody, and welcome to another episode of Serious Issues. My name is Andrew Levins, and if you've been tuned into the podcast this year, you'll know that I've become an enormous weeb, and what used to be a smattering of superhero comics every time we recorded Serious Issues has become just a non-stop onslaught of manga recommendations. We got a lot of good friends in our circle, friends that, you know, they see you falling off that path and they want to get you back on it. And luckily, I have two friends who have never met IRL before, but they are the admins of the Serious Issues Facebook group. While I, you know, strayed far from the superhero path this year, they stayed on it and keep reminding me when things are good. And, hey, remember this thing you used to like? It's been pretty good lately. Maybe you should get back on it, you know, but trying to hook me up with a fix of superhero comics. Either the best or worst thing about reading superhero comics is the five-letter word. Is it five letters? Yes. Event comics. And there was a huge event comic at Marvel this year called Empire with a Y. And my two guests today, Rebecca and Jake, who I'll introduce in just a moment, told me again and again, hey, this one's a pretty good one and maybe you should read it. So last week, I did what I've not done since last year, and I read more than 50 issues of superhero comics in one day, which it really felt like catching up with an old friend, or in this case, several hundred old friends on various Avengers teams. And I read all of Empire, and so joining me today for a spoiler-filled review of Empire and a discussion of our favorite and least favorite Marvel events. We're going international this week. We have from Milton Keynes in the UK, we have Rebecca Hart.
Hello.
And all the way over in Kentucky, USA, we have Jake Fortier.
Hi there. I'm glad we could get you back off the wagon.
That's what we're best at, to come to Marvel.
The weeb wagon. I mean, at the height of Serious Issues being a weekly podcast, I was definitely reading, you know, more than 20 Marvel comics a week. Because they, like, it's the worst. They put out so many, way too many comics.
And they still do. Like, yeah. let's face it, they're still putting out way too many comics. But at the moment, there's some real high points, which is nice. I haven't found it really hard to sort of cut back and go, these are the ones I have to have, because the ones that are good are really good.
Yeah, my plan was to just read the, like, you know, six-ish issues of Empire, the main event. But then I read all of the tie-ins, even the ones that you specifically told me were terrible.
That's because you have to have something to slam, yeah. Really. You know?
So I want to go through, this is almost like a catching up with Marvel Comics. And we're going to, I guess, go through, like, yeah, the Empire event. And then any other, I mean, I know the X-Books are phenomenal at the moment. I fell off that, even though I planned to stay up with that. I'd stopped reading it. So catching up with that was, I couldn't believe I stopped reading it. It's so good. I know, Jake, I think you read all the X-Books, right?
Yes, that is my dark burden, is to read every single X-Men comic that's coming out. And yeah, it's actually, I say dark burden, but it's a very good time to be an X-Men fan.
It's an excellent time to be an X-Men fan.
Very good. I wanted to give, a guide of the must-read and the maybe give it a skip. Because there are, like, just like Marvel releases too many comics, the X-Men release too many comics too. There's so many to catch up on. It's insane. But I thought we could start the episode by talking about the first issue of Rebecca, one of your favorite characters of all time. And I know your love for this character has deeply affected your ability to listen to this podcast in the past, because we dunk on him quite a lot. And his name is Tony Stark, a.k.a. Iron Man. And after a... Look, I think even you might admit that his last run written by Dan Slott was patchy in parts.
Very patchy. Very patchy. And look, let's face it, I don't mind people dunking on the character. I mind people who dunk on people who like the character. Like, you can hate him all you want. I don't care. But I like Tony. And yes, the Dan Slott run was very patchy. And the one good thing it brought to us was Dr. Shapiro, the talking cat. So, like, it's the only thing I will, I'll give it. And Iron Man 2020 was, Dan Slott's actual run, gorgeous art. Mm-hmm. Dan Slott's Iron Man 2020, not art that I like.
Damn.
And also a terrible event.
Oh, that's such a bummer.
Mini event. Which is such a bummer because, like, there's very few times when you have I'm not going to be alive when they get to 2099 and decide if they have to deal with that. But like 2020 was this kind of like, this is so cool. Like, you know, they're starting a new Iron Man run in 1999. We know they're building to 2020. All they have to do is reference that event in some way. And what a pig's ear.
Yeah. Cause the original Iron Man 2020 run is from 1993. Is that right?
Yeah, and it's fun, and it's just Arno was a Iron Man, and, you know, got Machine Man in it, and you only would have had to have a few of those themes, but I think he tried to, like, make it a little bit to make sense.
Right.
And it didn't need to in that way, and it was also tied into everyone's favourite event, Civil War 2. And,
you can't get rid of it.
Yeah, I mean, like... You know, if you're gonna, so thankfully that era is over. Hopefully we still have Dr. Shapiro still made it out of Iron Man 2020, but probably isn't going to be in the new run. And it's been taken over by Christopher Cantwell and Cafu.
So we know Christopher Cantwell from She Could Fly, a Dark Horse series that was one of our favorites on the podcast. And he's also a TV writer.
Yeah, he did Halt and Catch Fire, which is honestly one of my favorite TV shows ever. Like, it's in my top 10. So, and it's about the start of computing getting big in the 80s. So, there's his like computer tech side coming. It's got one of the most believable bisexual characters on TV, and it has this incredible set of strong women. So all the things that you're like, oh, I hope he's going to deal with Tony all right. And he has this big, he's obviously done this massive amount of research previously in things that are going to play into this. And the reason I say strong women is because when you're writing a Playboy, it probably helps if you have someone who can treat women well.
Yes.
Like, not just have them as sort of, we've only had the first issue so far. And he has Hellcat as his team up, Patsy Walker. As somebody else, he said he wanted to have somebody else kind of wealthy but grounded, he refers to her superpower as being human, and he's kind of stripping Tony Black. The first issue is him divesting a lot of money, getting away from Stark Industries, and making the old school suit that's not got Jarvis in it as much. Or he only has basic functions. It's got an AI called Boss instead. And his baddie is going to be Korvac.
Yeah, have we seen Korvac show up in the... Is that who the reveal of that kind of... The
guy? I believe that was my immediate to Connor was Korvac, right?
Yeah.
He's blonde and he's a genius. Yeah, let's go with it.
He can capture lightning.
Pretending to be God to other people, it kind of fits. So yeah, and I mean, it had one kind of rubbish page with him breaking up with Jan, breaking up with him was just kind of, hey, Tony, we're over. It was just like it was jolting, but I guess he wanted to address it. I don't know, but I thought it was pretty good, and the art's glorious.
Yeah, so he moves to a new house, and then is he in California now? I can't remember.
No, he's gone to Manhattan, I think.
Right, and so Jeanette Van Dyne, the Wasp, flies over and tells Tony that it's over. But you're right.
It's over. Bye.
I think if it happened over the phone, you wouldn't think it was such an odd scene.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like for someone to turn up and say, "That's it, we're done, bye," and he's like, "Okay."
Yeah, maybe Catherine just wanted to draw the Wasp.
I think, yeah, who knows? I thought, it's really, you know, if you're gonna draw Tony, then drawing him in a tux with bunny slippers is absolutely the way to do it.
Speaking of drawing Tony,
at one point he enters himself into a drag race. Which I
thought
was an excellent like way to show like, you know, this, even though I don't know how old Tony Stark is, but he's having another midlife crisis.
He's having a definite midlife crisis. Yeah. But one, I hope, humanizes him a bit more, because that's the reason I like him, is because, you know, he doesn't have the superpowers. He just has intelligence and, he wants to do better, but he keeps messing up because of his ego. And yeah. I think, to me, growing up, that was always a more realistic, something I could hold on to. Like, I'm never going to be as good as the good superheroes, but I can be someone flawed trying to be a good person.
And you're as rich as Tony Stark too. We should let the audience know that.
I'm certainly as clever as Tony Stark. You know.
Jake, did you get a chance to read Iron Man number one?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I don't have too much to add past what Rebecca was saying, although it did gift me, I think, maybe one of my favorite panels in years, with the Fat Tony Twitter troll. And I just
did anyone see on Twitter what happened with that?
No, I didn't see
the official Iron Man account made some comment about the new comic. Like, oh, it's not going well for Tony or something. All the replies it got were replies from the comic.
That's great. Yeah, so, I mean, we've seen multiple comics. I think Ryan North's Squirrel Girl run did it best, where you have the characters running their own Twitter account, and then, you know, you have, obviously, kind of to show, like, you know, the effects of, you know, toxic Twitter replies and how that can affect people, you know, that are celebrities. I think sometimes it's used to great effect. Other times it's really, really hammy, but I thought it was used really, really well in this. You have Iron Man kind of, you know, recounting what he's just done in the panels we've seen over Twitter, and then people just kind of giving him shit in the comments.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, it was a really great issue. I'm definitely on board for this. I need to go finish Christopher Cantwell's Doom run. Was that a miniseries, or is it still going?
No, it's still ongoing. Oh, man. So okay, cool. All right. It just had a big break, a big pandemic break, so...
Well, it wasn't entirely my fault that I stopped reading superhero comics. Like,
No, it certainly wasn't.
My love was dwindling, and my love for manga was skyrocketing, but then it became harder and harder to access new issues of comics, and they just stopped making them. So now it seems like all systems go, kind of. We are going to talk about, the Empire event was crazy, because when it was first announced, there were, like, far too many tie-ins. And then because of COVID, look, maybe it's a blessing. The list that appears at the end of the first few issues of Empire, of like the checklist of all the titles to pick up, it shrinks as you continue reading the event. So let's talk about it. Empire is officially, it's an Avengers and Fantastic Four event. And the bulk of the series was written by Al Ewing and Dan Slott. Who have we got? We've got art by Pepe Larraz. We've got art by... I always mispronounce his name, and Rebecca, I know you know how to pronounce it.
Who?
Valerio.
Oh, Valerio Schitti.
There we go. It's just my instinct to say shitty.
Yeah, me too. He's so far from my sister. My sister is dating an Italian. And when I say dating, I mean she's like lived with him for 15 years.
she's not going to listen to this. Don't worry.
She's not going to listen. And I actually asked her. I double checked. When the last time that you were struggling with it, I asked her. I was like, "How do you pronounce it?" Like, just so I know.
Jake, you ever asked any family members of pronunciation on my behalf?
None that come to mind. If there's any Canadian comic artists that you need a okay. a good pronunciation guide on, let me know.
Maybe I've been mispronouncing Zdarsky this whole time.
Yeah, I was about to say that.
The Z is actually silent, weirdly.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only Canadian we're sure of.
So Avengers Empire starts with there's a zero issue, but before that there is a Road to Empire. And like I saw that in solicitations and I was like, oh, I don't care about this. But I actually went back and read that after reading the first three issues of the main event, and it's so good. And it's the kind of thing that if I read this Road to issue from the get-go, I would have been so far on board for this event. So who wrote that Road to issue? Someone's got all the information, because I certainly don't.
I read it. I don't have all the information. I read it right at the beginning of, like, so long ago now. I didn't even remember it by the time Empire started proper.
The funny thing is, I made notes, but I forgot to put down that issue.
Oh, okay,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, thanks, Jake.
I'll Google it.
I think it's Al Ewing, though, isn't it?
Yeah, Al Ewing was the writer.
Yeah. So, like, you know, at the moment with Marvel, the recommendation is buy anything Al Ewing's writing. He is on fire right now.
And he kind of is a great writer to be adjacent Jonathan Hickman right now, who's taking care of the X books. I know that Jason Aaron is writing the Avengers run at the moment, and I while I have enjoyed things that he's done in the past, I dropped off this because it just became...
The Avengers is really horrible right now, to me,
yeah.
Generally. There's the odd really good issue, but it's such a mess.
It would just make so much sense to give Al Ewing the Avengers. You know, he's been doing such a good job on Hulk, and his work on Empire, you can tell when he's writing it and when Dan Slott's writing it. And that's not a dunk on Dan Slott. I just think that Al Ewing is very, very good at balancing the soap opera nature of Marvel Comics and then some of the more high concept, you know, sci-fi stuff, but not to the nth degree that Hickman does.
I think like Hickman, he's a continuity dude, which is why him writing Road to Empire was such a, yeah, of course, no-brainer.
Yep.
He's like getting you to exactly the place he wants you to be for the beginning of his event. And I think he's going to be steering Cosmic Marvel.
That's fun. Because he's doing Guardians now, isn't he?
He's doing Guardians, and we'll talk about the end of Empire when we get to the end of Empire. But I suspect that's the next team he'll be writing. And I think he's going Cosmic Marvel. Because also remember he had the big Ultimates Squared run.
That's
and,
right.
And, you know, yeah.
Which was an amazing run that was so brought down by these awful events that it had to tie into.
Yeah, it was absolutely destroyed by events. Maybe that's why he wanted to have a say in Empire. He's like, I'm not having another thing ruined by... I don't know how he feels about the Avengers. But the Avengers could actually do with a hiatus at the moment.
Well, look, this, like I said earlier, this is billed as an Avengers and Fantastic Four event. And I think the Avengers, besides, like Captain Marvel is used to great effect in this. We'll get into that in a moment. But for the most part, whenever it was about the Avengers, I was like, oh, come on. Like, next, go back to the main characters of this event, who I didn't even realize would be a part of it because their names aren't, you know, part of the name of the event. This is about Wiccan and Hulkling from the Young Avengers.
Everyone's favorite couple.
That's right. A lot has happened to them since they were first introduced in the Young Avengers. And they've never really had their own book. And if this enormous event is what it takes to get that, then this is the best event ever.
All right. I have one thing to say since my Google is faster than your Google. Road to Empire was written by Robbie Thompson.
Oh, wow.
By Al Ewing. Yeah.
Very underrated writer. He's one of my favorites at Marvel.
And I'm guessing that's because of his Meet the Skrulls.
Yes. So, of course. That's right. The Road to Empire, it ties into a miniseries that Marvel published last year, the year before that, called Meet the Skrulls, which was just like a really, really...
One of our favorites, yeah.
Yeah, just a sleeper hit, this like, you know, sad story. It was like five issues about a Skrull family undercover trying to find their daughter. And it had like shades of Tom King's Vision run, but was absolutely its own thing at the same time. And while those characters didn't play a big part in the actual Empire event, they were the kind of driving narrative force of this Road to Empire book. And so Hulkling, a.k.a. what's his real name, somebody?
Teddy.
Teddy what? That's I could get down Teddy.
I don't know.
No one knows. Teddy Holtley.
No one knows the last name of their favorite character.
I said favorite couple.
Favorite couple, yeah, sure.
Yeah. Just call them Billy and Teddy and joke about the Bill and Ted references and carry on. I don't know what his last name is. It's whatever his... go on, I'll look it up.
So Kaplan. What is it? Oh, Kaplan, is it?
No, that's Billy's.
Billy, damn it.
Oh, no. Ultimate.
Oh, no, it is Kaplan. No, it's not.
Wikipedia has it hyphenated now that they are,
spoilers, married. Yeah, I know, I saw that they cheated. Theodore Altman, Billy Kaplan.
Teddy Hulkling is part Kree and part Skrull. And if anyone who knows their Avengers history knows that the Kree-Skrull War... No, wait, is that what it was? Yeah, it's like a massive event written by the guy who wrote tons of Avengers books, whose name escapes me right now.
Is it Kurt Busiek?
Yeah, I think it is. I thought it's either him or the other guy.
I love that. Someone. Yeah.
It's an event that I know I should have read, but I never have. But I know it's a big important part of Marvel
history. I haven't read it for
a
long time, but yeah.
And you know, it gets referenced a lot. And so basically Empire is, because of Hulkling, he becomes the king, is he? The lord of... He's basically the uniting force of the Kree and the Skrull, and they're working together. But there's a new threat, a plant-based threat, that has ties into the Swordsman, who is one of the original Avengers members, except now he's like a plant.
You just got to hand wave and say, if you didn't read it at the time, it's just comics.
Yes.
But it did all happen at the time. This is all pulling from real comics, so...
And so that's the Avengers tie into it. They trust their old friend, who's now a tree with a sword. And then he
They've also fought alongside his son.
His son.
So yeah.
Cool. They get betrayed very early on in this event, they help initiate an attack on the Kree-Skrull alliance led by Hulkling, and many Skrulls and Kree die. And Tony especially takes it really, really hard that he backed the wrong horse. And who's on board with Hulkling and the Kree and the Skrull at the time? But it's the Fantastic Four, who have just rescued a young Kree kid and a Skrull kid who have been forced to fight in like tournaments in space. And so they've rescued them and they're trying to like raise them to like, you know, be in a loving family. And there's quite a cute little end note to their character's arc in the event.
Yeah.
So it is like, it feels a little bit arbitrary, like the Avengers and the Fantastic Four's involvement in this. They just happen to be there. But the heart of this story, like, yeah, it is these. What are the tree people called?
The Katati? I don't know how they're pronounced.
Space Ents.
All tree people in Marvel have hard pronunciations.
Yes.
But at least these ones are easier than the Iron Fist ones, which I would never even try to pronounce.
the driving force, it's this Hulkling story. And so much so that in the middle of this, there is a surprise wedding between him and Wiccan. And it was such a great moment. You have... The covers for all, is it all of the Empire issues or just the wedding ones, are done by the artist of Young Avengers.
Oh, Jim Chung.
That's right. So it was great to see his involvement.
Yeah.
Have I done a terrible or good or fine job of explaining Empire? Because there are a lot of moving parts, and you know, do I want to spoil everything? Possibly. What have I missed?
No.
I think that's a pretty good summation, especially with an event that's. It's like a new event that's happening, but it's also so mired in that old Avengers continuity between like the Kree and the Skrulls, and then you have the Swordsman, like you mentioned, and then Mantis shows up. So yeah, I think that's a pretty good summation.
Yeah, because the leader of the Katati is the son of Swordsman, who is now a tree, and Mantis, from best known, I guess, for her involvement in Guardians of the Galaxy, but. This happened in the early years of the Avengers comics. Swordsman and Mantis hooked up and made a tree baby.
who's the Celestial Messiah. So I think the interesting thing is that Teddy, there's been this prophecy that he would come and bring peace to the the Skrien Kroll because he's from both sides, but he's been on Earth, so this is how he gets pulled in. Because he's, as while they're talking, while they've united, they want a figurehead, and the figurehead, who better than someone you've got a prophecy, says that you should be leaving. So we've always known he's going to be the emperor of the, you know, of that alliance whenever the alliance happens. And on the other side, you have Sequoia, who is the Celestial Messiah. So there's a prophecy about him. So you've got these two, what happens to you if you're the son, the child of prophecy.
What if there are two chosen ones?
Yeah, but you know, like, you know, what? How is it treated differently? Like, you know, Teddy was allowed to grow up with a human family, and so he has a very different approach to this kid who's been basically like pushed aside and sort of told he's going to be this messiah. And I feel the whole event is about freeing up Billy and Teddy to go on to get away from the being kids to yes. Now being able to move forward as adults and to shake off this whole prophecy thing. It's like, so, all right, so we'll make him the emperor. Let's carry on.
Because we've also seen Billy Wiccan like at multiple stages of his life through like future visions, and we even met a future mm-hmm. version of him in a great run, which was, I think it's Robbie Thompson actually wrote.
It is Robbie Thompson, yeah. Sorcerer Supreme.
Which is a super underrated Doctor Strange book that came mm-hmm. out around the time the movie came out, until Marvel were like, we can't have two Doctor Strange books. So unfortunately yeah. it got axed. There was an older version of Wiccan who eventually becomes the Sorcerer Supreme in his future. So we know that, like, you know, big things are destined for both Billy and Teddy. I agree with you. This event totally frees them up to become adults, and hopefully we now get to see the rest of their lives instead of their attachment to the Young Avengers. That said, though, when the other Young Avengers characters do show up at various stages of this event, I was very happy and excited to see them.
I was so happy.
So I read the bulk of the event, which is like you get the Road to issue. There's a Zero issue. There's six main issues and then an Aftermath issue. But along the way there, and Jake, you made sure I picked these ones up, which is the start of my need to suddenly have to fill all the gaps in this event and read everything. But definitely agree with your recommendation to read the three one-shots Lords of Empire. And so one is called Emperor Hulkling, which is all about Teddy. The other one is The Celestial Messiah, which is all about the son of the swordsman. And then there is one about the swordsman as well. And they were all, like, I mean, Zdarsky wrote the Billy one, which I thought was awesome. And they're all pretty good.
With Matthew Oliveira, right?
Yes, that's right. So they co-wrote it, yeah.
Yeah. And the others were written. Alex Packnadel.
Yeah.
For his first Marvel.
Yeah. I mean, we mentioned earlier that a few tie-ins got axed, and the one we're most upset about is that the Thor tie-in was meant to be written by Ram V, who's become a recent favorite of, I know, the three of us, I assume. He wrote I always forget the name of it.
These Savage Shores.
Savage Shores.
You both said it the same. Time, so
He wrote These Savage Shores, and now he's right. There's a few books that he's writing now. Like, apparently he's taking over Catwoman and Justice League Dark, yeah. So I actually kind of want to check out those books now.
Oh, fuck. But that means now DC have got him, so...
Because
Marvel fucked him over. Oh, well, that's what happens. Welcome to comics.
Well, to be fair, he was working with DC way before.
Sure. But, I mean, so, now any goodwill towards Marvel has probably been burned away.
So
I'm not going to make any comments, but he's a lovely person.
That's
and
great.
He's also got a new graphic novel coming out soon.
Check him out. Ram V is a great writer for sure. Yeah, I mean, yeah. These Savage Shores probably collected in trade by now. That was a great run.
Yeah, a few times over.
Great. I mean, Halloween's coming up. That's a very good, different, spooky book. Definitely worth checking out.
Vampires and Colonialism.
Yeah. Together at last. So we have I mentioned earlier, like, I think the worst thing about this event was just the Avengers besides Captain Marvel. So Ronan the Accuser, the Kree accuser. He died. I don't know. I don't remember when he died, but he's dead. Do you guys remember when he died?
It could have happened during Kate's run. It could have happened during Bendis's run on Guardians. Ronan kind of goes in and out of death. Yeah.
So there's no accuser at the moment, and so because of her Kree heritage, quite early on in Empire, Captain Marvel is made the accuser. She becomes the accuser, and she gets an outfit change. It's great.
It is great.
I really liked her involvement in this, the She-Hulk is used pretty well. She and the Thing from Fantastic Four kind of fight alongside Billy for a while. That aspect is great. Iron Man is kind of like affected by his decision at the start of the event, and then doesn't do anything for the rest of the event except make suits.
Which, I mean, to be fair, that is his. That's what, he does a lot of making suits.
Yeah,
you know.
So he makes an Iron Man suit for Reed Richards, which, you know, it's like, you know, events always have shit like that in it, and it's cute.
They do.
Yeah,
it's cute. But he also gets a very fun Civil War joke with Cap. Right at the end, which made me laugh a lot. It's like when he starts, see how we could register them. He's like, don't even start.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, that was good. That's definitely Slot.
That was
too.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was definitely Slot, but it was like, I'll let him. the art was so good, I'll let him.
And so I think the people who I mean, poor old Ghost Rider, he does something very cool in the Zero issue, which he turns the spaceship into possesses it with his demon powers. What is he used to attack? What's his all-seeing eye of power? Whatever it is, he uses that on all the Kree and Skrull at one point, which is awesome. Especially because it doesn't work on the Kree, because every battle that they fight, they believe is right, so they have no penance to suffer for. But then after he does that amazing thing, he's not seen for the rest of the event. Thor, like, I mentioned to you guys that, like, pretty much what happens to Thor in Age of Ultron, where he just, in the movie where he gets sent to do his quest. They even refer to it as a side quest in this. He gets sent to do his side quest, and that was meant to be the tie-in series that Ram V was writing.
Yeah.
But that doesn't exist, so Thor... You just see maybe one panel of every two issues of him on his quest, and then he comes back and he's like, "I've learned much." And it's like, good for you, man. Like,
that was really it was really cracking me up about him too, because, like, I guess he gets some plant powers in it, and then at the very end of the event, they're like, "Okay, no more plant powers. Get rid of them.
Yeah.
We got to move on. Got to tie into Fortnite. let's get on with it, Thor. Come on, get rid of the plants."
Get rid of it. Go back to... Yeah, exactly.
Only lightning now.
Donny Cates was just being like, I'm not right. Thor can't have plant powers.
It's not metal enough.
It's not metal enough.
But, you know, I mean, that could have been really fun, I think. Like, if he goes...
I would have liked to see it. I would have liked to see it,
I would have guessed that he would have, like, you know, become one with the world tree or whatever it is.
Yeah, and I would have... There's definite crossovers I would have cut instead.
So, I mean, I'm going to go out and say it. The Captain America tie-in is shocking. It is the most pro-army...
I've never seen anything like it. Like, we all joked when Superman got that way. Do you remember, like, they had the road trip? And we were, like, going, oh, that was pretty pro-army. Then, it's like Marvel said, hold my tea. Yeah. I mean, to be fair, it's actually written by someone in the army, I think. I think he's like a serving...
Is it Philip Johnson? Is it his name? He's written lots of comics before, and some I've actually enjoyed, but...
It was really horrible. And I say this as a Cap fan. I was just like, what is... I was almost offended by how gung-ho it was.
It's bizarre. Like, he doesn't do any team-ups with superheroes, it's just teaming up with the army the whole time. It's so strange.
I remember when the issue came out and Rebecca messaged me and she was like, I don't think I'm a Cap fan anymore. And I was like, okay, I should probably steer clear of this one then.
I was like, if you could pick all the reasons why I shouldn't like Cap, they were all in that issue. Yeah. Like, And I was like, this is just, I mean, I'm not loving the Cap run generally, but then this one was like, wow. But it just seems so pointless as well. We've already got the Avengers fighting on Earth. Like, we've already seen the fight on it. We don't need to see how the little people are doing it. Like, give me Thor being a tree man. A tree man god instead.
Yeah, I mean, so there's a Avengers tie-in issues, which were completely pointless. Unfortunately written by Jim Zub, who I normally like a lot. But it's like writing these like fairly like disconnected stories.
They were just
featuring...
I thought they were just unmemorable. Like, I barely remember they happened. Like, when you mentioned them, like when you were reading them, I was like, isn't that all the Tony stuff? I quite like that. Like, you know, it's lame, but no, yeah, it's basically them just going and fighting.
It's like which characters aren't in the event. So it's like a team up of Mockingbird, oh God, I can't remember any of them.
I can't even remember who's in it. It's just like, and I read it, and I was like, okay. Anytime they're just a big fight, I lose interest a little bit.
Yeah, you want the melodrama. That's why Marvel Comics.
You
are
want
so
story.
Fun.
I mean, like, you know, like I like a good fight, but in amongst the story, please.
I think
Fantastic Four. Oh, sorry, you go, Jake.
I think that's why I liked those Captain Marvel issues too, because it was obviously tying into the event, but there's a lot of like character work on Carol in those issues.
Yes.
Yes, definitely.
Even if it like kind of fizzles out plot wise towards the end, there's so much character work and there's so much like you get to meet like her Kree sister, which was like a new development, made the issue sell out.
L'Oreal.
L'Oreal, shampoo. Yeah.
And everything that happens in her issues gets addressed in the main event too. Like, you know, very quickly, but it does feel like you've, you know, read issues that enriched your enjoyment of the rest of the story, which I think is, like, the most important thing when it comes to tie-ins.
Yeah, I mean, like, what do you think about Empire X-Men? Because I think it's an excellent story. I'm not sure it necessarily needed to be a tie-in.
Oh, it doesn't need to be a tie-in, but it's still, that's probably the most enjoyable. Besides the Billy and Teddy stuff, for me, I thought that was the strongest four issues. And it made no sense that it was that good because every issue is written by three different X-Men writers. Like, every single
Which is,
one
I,
of them.
I loved it. It was so fun. And anytime you can get both a Smith reference and a Plants vs. Zombies reference in the same issue, I'm just like, I was like, there was this one as the Cap one was written to put me off, this one was written to pull me in. Because I spent hours of my life on Plants vs. Zombies, which is basically the plot of X-Men Empire.
Yeah, that first Plants vs. Zombies game is so wonderful. And then they fucked it up by making the second one like a pay-to-play piece of shit.
For sure.
Yeah. but that's another podcast. The X-Men Empire tie-in is just such a joy to read. It's Magic's book, really. And she is so...
But it also has Himbo Angel, which is a thing of beauty.
So I think in saying those two names, you know immediately that Leah Williams wrote at least one of the issues. And her issue that she was on, the dialogue, especially for Magic, is just so wonderful. You have a team up between the X-Men and the, it was recently introduced in Hickman's run, these grandmas,
the horticulturists.
Yeah. And it's just, I wish that they kept Leah around to write dialogue just for the grandmas and Magic for the entire run, just because her issue is just so great. And, that consistency would have been awesome, but I mean everything else that happens in those four issues, it was just such a joy to read. Even if you don't read the Empire event and you just want to read a really fun X-Men story,
also addresses what Wanda did to them.
Yes,
it mentions M-Day, which I didn't think we were going to get quite this early on in Hickman's X-Men. That was a pleasant surprise.
The miniseries is bookended by basically a conversation between Doctor Strange and Scarlet Witch about her saying no more mutants and her attempts to bring them back, and she does so as zombies. And
that's the zombies.
Yes, and there's a theory that the main zombie who explodes is a character introduced in a very underrated X-Men miniseries called The Last X-Man.
Bailey, whatever.
And that was written by...
Max Bemis.
That's right, Max Bemis. That was great. So that was just such a great. That's by far the highlight of Empire for me. And another pleasant surprise was a single issue of, it was a tie-in of the Savage Avengers, Empire Savage Avengers, which was written by Jerry Duggan and had art by
Greg Smallwood.
Greg Smallwood. His art is always great, and it was like a Conan story, so you know Smallwood drawing Conan is going to be beautiful. It was like him teaming up with Venom. And it was like a silly, inessential story, but it looked wonderful and it was fun. That I would definitely recommend that too. The Fantastic Four tie-in issues were actually quite sweet. You have Franklin and Valeria sent back to Earth, and they have to protect these Skrull kids, the Skrull and the Kree kids, and to help them along their way, you have Wolverine and Spider-Man, which was a fun team-up. That was really enjoyable.
Yeah, I'm kind of hot and cold on Slott's other Fantastic Four stuff, but I think he does a really good job with Ben Grimm and Alicia, his wife, especially.
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. And they get a really lovely moment in Empire.
Yeah, yeah. And so just seeing more stuff with Alicia, Slott writing her, and then that moment they have at the end where they actually end up... Are we okay for spoilers, or...
Yeah, we're going to spoil the rest of Empire. If you've got listened this far, we're ruining an event for you. But it's a good event.
We spoiled the wedding, to be honest, so let's go for it.
Just go read it all. It only took me an entire day, and then come back and listen to the rest.
If you don't want to get it now, wait a few months. It'll be on Marvel Unlimited. You know.
Yeah.
It'll go
see
down
you in
super
6 months,
easy.
Everybody.
But yeah, and I really liked how at the end of the event, even though I was kind of cold on the Fantastic Four stuff, they did have that really sweet moment where they adopted that the Kree kid and the Skrull kid, and just kind of expanding the family, the Fantastic Four family that way was really sweet. And I was like, am I getting teary-eyed at a Dan Slott comic right now? And I was.
I mean, look, Slott's done so many good comics. It's just that he's also done, like, I don't know, sometimes I just feel like he walks a line that makes him... I compare him to Bendis a lot, where I feel like he does too much or writes too many at one point. And like, but like the bulk of his Spider-Man run I loved, and I really enjoyed his Silver Surfer run. I love his old stuff with She-Hulk, and like, you know, the further back you go, I find most of that stuff enjoyable. It's just, yeah, I mean, the Fantastic Four stuff I really didn't enjoy, especially with all the hoopla and like excitement as they were returning. It just seemed like such a meh. And yeah, I really did not get into his Iron Man run recently either.
But he's promised big changes for the Fantastic Four, so let's see. Issue 25 coming up or something. But then he said it was a massive status change at the end of this. I'm not sure it was a massive status change, but it was sweet.
What's the status change? Is that Ben Grimm is a dad now? Is there more than that?
I imagine so. I don't know. That's the only thing I took from it.
Johnny's really good in this event too. He was, he's just kind of there, but he's fun.
He's fun, and when they pop back to when he goes to see Billy, and Billy's all like giving him his whole love story, he's very funny. He has a few good quips.
I do dig the subtle nods that to Johnny's sexuality too. Just with him always commenting on how pretty Teddy's eyes are.
Yeah,
loved those moments.
Because they are, let's face it.
Empire ends with, Billy's Teddy's grandmother is a Skrull who tries to, like, basically undo all of the prophecy and kill Teddy, and they beat her. And
It's all like, whatever, there's a bit of, it works, but it didn't matter.
But in the middle of...
you never had any doubt.
In the middle of the event, we learn that just before all this craziness started, Billy and Teddy went to Vegas and had a Vegas wedding with only their closest friends, the Young Avengers, there to see them wed. It's a really beautiful moment. And I did see some criticism that, like, you know, this kind of sucks that it wasn't like a big, you know, promoted event with heaps of lead up. But like, you kind of like, it's a Vegas wedding. It kind of rules that it's like, you know, it just happens in the middle of this event, and it's a nice moment.
Yeah, I totally take all the criticism on. And I know that I just disagree with the people. Like, I really liked it because it seemed very impetuous and young, which is nice. And how nice is it to have a cliffhanger that isn't end of the world.
Or like someone gets a sword through their horror. Chest.
Yeah. It's like, oh, we're married is the cliffhanger to that issue. And you're like, what? That's great.
Yeah.
Because like in Strikeforce, which is where Billy is, there was this definite moment of there was this reference to him spending an hour with Teddy. This hour. And everyone's like, well, he clearly knows what's going on in Empire because we've got an hour till we have to say goodbye. And that's the last you hear about it. And then they come back in this and go, what happened in that hour was, you know, they have sex. They say, oh, you know, when we get back, they have a little love confession. When we get back, kind of let's get married. And Teddy's, why wait? Mm-hmm. How quickly can you get us to Vegas? And when your boyfriend is Billy Kaplan, the answer is pretty quickly. and they have the Young Avengers creators, the officiants for the wedding, which is very sweet. They're Alan Heinberg and Jim Chung.
Mm-hmm.
And in the final issue, when they do their renew their vows, so to speak, in a nice Jewish wedding.
Yeah, best line of the entire event.
Yeah, apparently all the Young Avengers writers and artists are all there as Scree and Kroll characters. So you can go find Kieran and so on.
But the rabbi has the line of the event.
Oh, yeah.
What does he say?
That's my current...
Well, boys, that was my first outer space same-sex Jewish wedding, but I hope it's not my last.
I love when he cracks the glass, the sound effects in rainbow colours. It's very sweet.
Oh yeah, that's wonderful. I loved the misdirect too, because I feel like, you know, Marvel always hints at breaking up the beloved couples, because they have done exactly that so many times in the past. And at one point in this in the event, in Zdarsky and Olivieri, in there.
Yeah, by the way, it's Anthony Oliveira. Oh, yeah, I said Matthew because I'm an idiot. I had to make mistakes
in this podcast. You're allowed to.
Yeah.
Constant ones over multiple episodes at the same time. In the Emperor Hulkling issue, we see that, like, you know, that this event is going to really, really strain their relationship, and that, like, Hulkling has to pretty much disavow his relationship with Billy to continue. And you're like, oh shit, it's going to be the end of them. Like, but yeah, to find out that amongst all of that, they were married. It's just,
they're already married. Yeah,
it's great.
I love it.
Yeah,
especially as I think my prediction for the event was that there would be a strain, and then that the aftermath issue would be the wedding. Like, it would be a very short strain because Al loves them.
Yeah.
So that's because he last wrote them in US Avengers or New Avengers, whichever run that was, and he left them, like, Sunspot bought them a flat.
I
and sent them cake.
I'm well overdue for a reread of that tremendous, like, very underrated Al Ewing. Like, it's three separate series that all tie in together.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's US Avengers, then New Avengers. I think, I can't remember what order they go in.
And then there's one more. Okay, but it tells this ongoing story with Roberto.
Yeah,
Sunspot
taking over AIM.
Yeah, oh, it's such a great run. But yeah, so it's really nice. Like, they're all at the wedding, and then the Young Avengers are all at the wedding. And the whole event, because of obviously Captain Marvel's involvement. She used to be the head of Alpha Flight. I think she still is at one point in this.
I think she's only just left it. Yeah,
and I was thinking, where's Abigail Brand, who is one of my like secret favorite Marvel characters, who I don't think is used to great effect as often as she needs to be. She's kind of like in charge of, like, you know, in space. She's the space lady.
Sword. She's the space.
Was introduced by Joss Whedon in Astonishing X-Men, but don't hold that against her. She's a great character with wonderful green hair, and so when she shows up at the wedding, it almost steals the show. And, like, yeah, you know, she's not there to celebrate. She's there to slap Captain Marvel in the face.
The slap of the century.
And we then get this insane flash forward after the wedding, and looks like Abigail Brand is going to become, like, a massive threat.
I thought she was there to save him. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Who knows? Yeah.
I kind of took it the same way that Levins did with, like, she's there to take him out. Yeah.
Well, either way, she's in an X outfit, so X-Men in space.
Very, very cool. And she's got—is that what's his name?
Gateway with her.
Gateway. No. Is it Gateway?
Manifold.
Manifold. Manifold. Yeah. So, and that's, yeah. that's, you know, he's a very, he's one of Hickman's favorite characters. So.
And all of ours, I think.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I love Manifold. Best Australian yeah. Marvel character.
Have you guys... Sadly, there's not many options.
There are so many options. I've been rereading at Jake's recommendation. I was rereading, Marauders mm-hmm. and Pyro's in
oh,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
Pyro's a lot of fun.
Yeah. yeah.
He's got a skull tattoo True. On his face now.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
yeah.
So obviously he's not my favorite. But,
obviously.
Well, I do
Sorry,
love
Pyro.
but yeah, so I love that, like, you know, it sets up like, oh, you know, we have Emperor Hulkling now, and he has the Super Scroll beneath him. He has, like, you know, a Kree guy who refuses to be punished, or he refuses to not be punished by him.
For yeah.
His, yeah, which is excellent. And then, so the flash forward, it is this Kree dude who's had the shit beat out of him because he promises to never stand down, and he may have had the shit beat out of him by Abigail Brand, who looks awesome, new haircut, X-Men outfit, yeah. enormous gun, standing over Billy, Teddy, and yeah.
And there's a classified X book in the Marvel solicits for December. So all bets are on. We'll see this team set up there.
And then, like, the stupidest thing, though, is, like, you get that insane tease for the future of all these characters, which I thought was just wonderful. Normally, like, the teases, like...
You just turn you off.
Oh, like, well, I remember the one at the end of Civil 2, it just teases, like...
Oh. Jeez.
It's just advertising. I think it's for six.
They're
different
basically
books.
Just one page from each new book.
yeah.
yeah,
shocking.
Yeah.
I think that definitely earns it the title of absolute worst event in Marvel history. I think.
yeah,
either Civil War 2 or Age of Ultron. They're both Bendis books that both ended in a similar way, with just advertising for future series. But this is just such an awesome tease. You have no idea when this is going to happen.
Yeah,
but then you turn the page and it's like next, and it's just a picture of Jason Aaron's Avengers. of Moon Knight and Black Panther fighting. And I'm like, they weren't even in this series. Black Panther yeah. is it. Another sadly cancelled tie-in event was Attack on Wakanda, I think it was called.
Yeah.
And that was meant to be written by Jim Zub. And we see, like, yeah, Black Panther dies at one point in Empire, but it's, like, such a non-event.
He got better.
Yeah.
I mean, and which actually, it pains me to say that, given, you know, what actually happened in the real world this year. But yeah, it's such an odd moment. This, like, you know, very fleeting moment of death, and then a psych out.
It's another pointless little bit that we don't really have explained. But you know what? Given that it came amid a pandemic, I'm prepared to hand wave the fact that we didn't get to see Thor do his thing and Black Panther do his thing.
I think
it's
totally.
A shame.
I just wish they cancelled, like, Captain America, you know, like you.
yeah, yeah, me too. Yeah. They really should have, but, you know, who knows what contracts are what, so...
And I wonder if this book almost benefited from the pandemic in a certain sense, just because I think this is maybe one of the only, or one of the few Marvel events where it had a consistent art team through every single issue,
mm-hmm.
with Valerio Skitty and Marte Gracia,
yeah,
doing the art on those issues, to where it kind of, like, when I first read this first one right through, I'm like, okay, that was fine. But the more I thought about it, I just kept on finding more things to appreciate, like that consistent art all the way through.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, like, to...
It certainly didn't have to have any extensions of, like, oh, we need another issue.
Like, let me think, like, Age of Ultron and Civil War 2. I feel like the final issues of both of those have, like, 10 different artists.
Because they do. Like, they're just, like, adverts.
Quesada did, like, a bunch of art in the final issue of Age of Ultron, I think.
Oh, man.
Like, he was like, oh, fuck, I fucked it. There needs to be an extra issue. Don't worry, everyone. I'll do the art. So, yeah, any closing thoughts on Empire before we move on to more other events, less good events?
Two issues that we glossed over was... So, they had that Empire X-Men miniseries, but then mm-hmm. also the main X-Men book tied yes. into that. And issue 11 is an awesome, just rad Magneto issue where you just get to see yes. him go all out. There's a sequence where he's confronting one of the plant people, and it's just him repeatedly dropping satellites on him over and over again. And
then the people who own the satellites call up angry.
It's probably Tony. It's fine.
The mutants are like, he owes us. But yeah, those two issues are great too. And I think it highlights, Hickman always kind of has great like event tie-in issues. Like
100%.
If you think back to back when Original Sin was happening, yet another Marvel event, the Avengers issues that tied into that were huge because it was like this big plot point that set off like the entire last third of his run on the Avengers, with Cap finding out about him being brainwashed and all that jazz.
Of course.
So it's just nice to see like, oh hey, Hickman still. He can still like take a tie-in issue and really turn it on its head and do some great stuff with it.
Well, I think he wrote the Doctor Strange and Scarlet Witch scenes in the Empire X-Men issues as well.
Yeah, that would make sense.
He writes such a good Doctor Strange.
He writes a lot of very good characters. He's talented man.
Yeah, so I fell off the X-Men stuff for a while because I loved Powers and Dawn of X, the 12 issues that he wrote that, you know, came out during a time when no other X-books came out, and I was like, oh wow, is this just going to be like just X-Men only written by Hickman? But then they launched 10 X-Men books that, you know, he wrote two of, and then there were all these other writers, and some of them like they're like going back now and rereading them, which I started doing last night. They are all actually quite good. But I think the voices were so different to Hickman immediately, and I just was like, oh man, this is not what I wanted. I wanted the thing that obviously Marvel would never do in 100 years, but you know,
and he wouldn't be able to do. So I mean, like, just keep up to it. No,
I just mean like, imagine if there were only two X books,
which would be incredible. But
yeah.
The one thing I do like is he's brought on a lot of people who wouldn't normally. You know, I really like the teams he's put together.
Yeah.
They all have, you know, like, it's really nice to see them all having a little role to play in. And the nice thing with X-Men is we do get sort of wound up about should we be reading all of it. But you can just, like, I've got down to just reading three, or I would if it wasn't for Ten of Swords coming up in the next event.
Yeah, so this is what you've done to me. Empire has convinced me I'm an idiot for dropping X-Men. I now need to read all of it again. So I'm in the process of catching up on that. And I really want to catch up to Swords. So maybe we should reconvene once Swords is finished. That should be our next episode together.
Yeah.
If you guys are just the Marvel team.
But I mean, the nice thing about Ten of Swords is that they're doing it like the Avengers No Road Home ones. Like, it's going to be you're going to have to buy every single X title, but there isn't an event one as much.
See, and I mean, I have fond memories of that too. And like that, and this is like that's a much maligned era of Avengers comics too. But I really enjoyed that weekly Avengers series.
Both of those runs were so much better than what we've got with Jason Aaron right now, which I think is a shame.
I think you have the seeds for Empire sown in those events too, because Al Ewing was a big part of the book.
Yeah, and also I think the seeds of some of the X work, because they were very collaborative. You know, there's a bunch of writers getting together and telling a story together, and I feel that's probably how the X-Men, I mean, we know they've got a sort of Slack where they chat and a Zoom where they chat. So that's where Al Ewing's first reveal was, like, Al Ewing on the X-Men? But, you know, like, I think there's a certain benefit from having a writer's room approach to superhero comics.
Yeah, I agree with you for sure. And I mean, I think events is a great place to showcase that. So with that in mind, Empire, I think for the most part from me, gets a big thumbs up. And I assume from the two of you as well.
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
Thank you so much for pushing it on me, you dope peddlers.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Let's go. Let's move on to other Marvel events from as far back as you would like to visit. Do we have a favorite and least favorite Marvel event that we can talk about? Jake, I'll start with you.
I think my favorite one, just showing how much of a Hickman fan I am, I really Infinity.
Everyone's...
Oh, right, cool. You have it. Ooh, great. So it's going to be a lot of Hickman love.
Yeah, it's going to be an all Hickman love.
And I think I love Infinity so much is because it's this big, sprawling space event, basically, but it doesn't put you off with, like, too much, like, old Avenger stuff, old X-Men stuff. You're just basically, you're told the stakes immediately, like, hey, the Avengers are going out for a space war. While they're out for a space war, Thanos thinks it's a really great time to go to Earth and mess stuff up. So you have those two different things going on. Avengers out in space fighting this huge threat, and then the people at home.
It's tree people again, isn't it?
It's always bloody tree people.
It's tree people in Infinity as well, isn't it?
Is it?
Oh. The builders, are they kind of tree people? I can't remember.
Nah, I don't think so. All but right. I mean, I don't know. God, it's a long time since I've read Infinity, but I'm going to read it again now. After that,
Infinity has my favorite Hulk. Thor hammer moment ever. It's like the second to last issue. I think he basically sends Mjolnir into orbit, and it eventually comes back to him at like the most perfect moment. It's great.
There's this big one page spread where you just see it eviscerating one of the aliens like right through the chest, and it's pretty great. And that was also like pretty early on in Hickman's Avengers runs, so there's a bunch of like new Avengers stuff with like them dealing with the multiverse, and I feel like a lot of the tie-ins were pretty decent. I remember especially liking the Nova ones at the time, which I think Zeb Wells did. But yeah,
that was great.
Infinity is probably one of my all-time faves for sure.
Let's get our favorites out of the way before we shit all over a bunch of stuff. Rebecca,
I think you're hinting at the same as me. Secret War.
Okay, great. Yeah,
time runs out. Yeah, it was so good. I was just like, it just came at a perfect time. It was at the end of the Avengers run, which was just incredible. And it's just so perfectly set up. Like, let's remove it from what we... Like, you don't have to tie in with everything that's going on before because it's this new battle world.
Yeah.
Like, I've got my whole new sort of premise. I can rip away continuity and just say, here's God Doom. This is what's going on. Reed Richards has disappeared because it's God Doom. And let's have some fun with it. And if you're going to talk about good tie-ins, there is no event we'll ever have as good tie-ins as Battleworld and Secret World. It's basically go to all the Marvel writers and any other writers and say, go write fanfic.
Yes. Do a sequel to anything from the past.
We'll just give it a name of anything we've done before. Go have fun. You're in alt universe. None of it's going to stick. So you get the sort of my favorite Wild West Avengers. Yep.
1872.
It's Jerry Duggan and Nick Varela, yes. With Steve as Sheriff and Tony as Blacksmith. And then what other ones do we love? I loved all of them. Planet Hulk, which was, if you like Steve and Bucky, that's the one you should be reading.
I loved Kieran Gillen wrote an Abigail Brand
Siege. Was it Siege?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. And it was like her being like the last S.H.I.E.L.D. or S.W.O.R.D. agent.
It was really good. There was the Thor's one.
Oh, God.
We got Throg
How
back.
Good was Thor's?
Thor's was so
good. Everyone just did so many... Yeah, there were so many good books. I don't remember any of the X-Men stuff.
I mean, there was an Armor Wars one. Yep. There was a Spider Island one. I mean, it's just... there was a Hydra one, which was a lot of fun.
Oh, there was that comedy book as well. The Hydra agent comedy book. That was wonderful. Agent.
That was around that time, wasn't it? There was a Runaways one.
Yep.
In every single one, Bucky dies. Every single... Like, I only know this because I'm friends with many, many Bucky fans. Not that I dislike Bucky, but
it's a prerequisite to being your friend, isn't it?
It does seem to be. That everyone I know... I mean, maybe it says that the character is super... popular,
killable,
and that's good too. But no, but it was one of those, like, almost an inside joke that unless you read them all and you notice those things, because all the deaths made sense, but it was just like, oh, they've killed Bucky again, oh, they've killed Bucky again in every single one. The Runaways is what made me think about that, because I think he's like a hall monitor or something and just randomly dies. But they're all so good. Like, and you can basically pick and choose the one. You didn't have to read any of them. Like, very few of them were essential. So it was just like, literally, you just need to read my main book and everything else is just fun.
And God, the main book was close to perfect. Like, it's so much fun. There's
solved by a hamburger.
Miles Morales is like, you know, the way that he gets brought to the main Marvel universe, which, like, you know, you forget that he was an ultimate universe. Oh my God, the end of the ultimate universe as well. So much great stuff happened in that series.
It's just, it's almost a perfect event.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, in that it's just, but it's just like, unlike many of the others, it has a huge amount of fun behind it. And I think that's why it stands out as one I love. It's like, I quite like Original Sin. I can't, you know, there's ones that I'll stand up and say I quite like Shadowlands that everyone absolutely despises.
The Daredevil one,
and I get why they despise it, and I'm coming at it from an Iron Fist fan rather than a Daredevil fan, so I get why Daredevil fans absolutely hate it, but for me, I really liked it. So I have a certain fondness for Civil War. I wouldn't say I love it. But, you know, there was a thing going around on Twitter the other day about, like, which four comics do you love more than anyone that you know? And everyone's picking ones that everyone loves.
Sure.
Like, it'd be like, you know, like, because it's hard not to, because your favourite comic is likely to be one that everyone loves. And I was like, the way to do it is to just go troll people and say Civil War. You know, like, things that no one loves, but, like, we get why, you know, like, so I could say I probably like it more than you guys.
They're one of my favourite moments in comics happens in Civil War. It's when the Punisher saves Spider-Man. I love that moment
so much. Good.
And like, I know that it's so, I mean, one thing you have to remember when you reread those books now is that when they came out, like, Mark Miller wasn't a complete fuck stain yet. So it was like, you know, like, he was genuinely doing things that hadn't been done before in comics. And I think like that comic, for the most part, brings together so many elements of the Marvel Universe, like, in such a great way too. Like, the superhero registration, it's a genius idea
I do actually like it. And you know, like, I grew up with the whole Cap Iron Man friendship and seeing it come to this head, and it's another one where actually if you read the main event only versus if you read all the tie-ins, I think you come up with a very different view of who's right.
Sure.
And which I didn't really understand. Like, a lot of my friends were like, "Oh, I'm team Iron Man," and I was like, "Really?" And then I realized it's because they'd only read the main book, and I'd read the whole event, and I was like, "Okay." So like, and then I went back and read it, and went, "You do get a slightly different sort of, you know,
you spend more time with Iron Man, don't you, than Cap overall."
Cap seems a bit more intractable. And I'm not saying that Iron Man... I don't even know which side I'd be on right now. But, like, it's more that you don't get as much of the Cap point of view in the main comic.
Who,
yeah.
Who dies in that one? I can't remember.
Goliath.
It is Goliath, yeah.
Yeah, and then fake Thor.
That's right.
I think one of the great things about Civil War, going back to it too, is that you still have that like amazing Steve McNiven art all throughout it.
Yeah.
Which just, I feel like, really heightens that cinematic feel that the whole event
definitely
has. Yes.
I think one of, yeah, and I think one of my favorite, like, you're talking about having some of your favorite moments. I mean, like, I could jokingly say it's the Moon Knight get a room comment, because it's a highlight for me. But for me, it's actually kind of how the fighting ends. It's like when Steve just kind of like, there's just no, he's right, we're hurting innocent people, let's just stop fighting, and gives himself up. Because it seems like they're never going to resolve the actual point on registration. Mm. So it's just that kind of understanding of, it's better for me to just say I'm wrong, let's stop, we shouldn't be fighting each other. And that would only ever come, that would never come from Tony.
God, and the whole reason it kicks off is, so I remember just being so like, wow, it's like, you know, of course a mutant would have a reality TV show. Like,
yeah.
And like, now that those kind of plot points that just get done, have been done to death, like, you hate them now. But at the time, like, it was such a genius idea.
And the whole frontline tie-in with what they did with Speedball, who's one of my secret faves, because he has a cat, but not just because he has a cat. But.
Oh, and then what they do with, who's the new mutant who feels guilty?
That's
Speedball. And what does he become? He becomes like
Penance.
It is Penance. Yeah, yeah. Here we go. That's the magic word of today.
But it's just that whole event with him trying to do better and trying to like make up for it. Anytime they have a frontline tie-in, they're always like the best for me.
I was about to go on about how much I love what happens to that character, but then I realized I'd be telling people to read a Warren Ellis book, which I can't do anymore.
Yeah, which is such a shame.
So you know,
it is what it is.
Yeah, I look, Secret Wars and Infinity are two of my all-time favorites. I mean, that whole, I know a lot of people say that the Fantastic Four run is the best thing Hickman's done for Marvel, or, you know, or himself. But I think the Avengers is, for me, like, that's my favorite Hickman thing. And just, like, you know, introducing so many important plot points for the Marvel Universe at the time. Like, I remember the end of Infinity is when the Terrigen Mists get unleashed onto Earth, which then, you know, there's so much great Black Bolt stuff. And then, obviously, that gives us Ms. Marvel and so many other. Like, I know a lot of people hated that era of Inhumans over X-Men. And I don't blame them, because a lot of the stuff that happened to the X-Men during that time was shitty, but there's some great, like, Charles Soule's Inhumans run, that which kind of spins out of it. Infinity is great. But anyway, you guys have already taken my favorite Hickman one, so, and like you, Rebecca, I loved Original Sin. I think it's a very underrated event, even though it totally falls apart, and the final two issues are just, like, you know, all these dumb Marvel events, it's just dumb fighting. But I'll pick a run that we talk about on the podcast a lot, is one of my favorites, Annihilation.
Big cosmic
event. Actually, I'm gonna get it, because that one wasn't actually written by Abnett and Lanning.
I believe it's Keith Giffen.
Yeah,
as the main event.
I actually just read it over the. It was one of my pandemic reads.
So I like Annihilation, but my favorite thing within that big cosmic run is the follow-up event that Abnett and Lanning did write, and I think it's called Thanos Rising. And that brings together all of the stuff that they'd been working on together. Is it called Thanos Rising? No,
is it maybe...
sorry, that's Jason Aaron. Thanos Imperative. The Thanos Imperative.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, I should know the thing that I'm saying is my favorite. But look, to be fair, you took my actual favorite. So give me a break. The Thanos Imperative.
It's gonna happen.
Because I almost view all of that as like its own big event. Their entire run of, like, you know, reestablishing the cosmic characters, and then, you know, so much architecture for future Marvel releases is done by Abnett and Lanning during that time. Imperative is just great, because it establishes it's all about Star-Lord and Nova, you know, taking down Thanos once and for all with, you know, the support of all these characters that you've met along the way on their cosmic run. And it's just it's a wonderful ending that at one point I thought was the final moment of both of those characters for so long.
And then Bendis showed up.
Mysteriously comes back, and then they actually explain what happened to Richard Rider in a very underrated Nova miniseries that came a few years later. But yeah, I love Thanos Imperative.
Yeah. All those old, like, Marvel Cosmic Event... Well, old, I say, but it's only been a few years. Like, from Annihilation through were some of the first comics I ever read when I got into it. So they'll always have that, like, special place. And I think Thanos Imperative was actually the first comics that I collected way back in the day.
Oh, wow.
So that's me with Civil War. Civil War was the first Marvel event I ever read. So yeah, it holds a special place in my heart.
It might be one of the first ones I ever read, actually, like, because I'm not sure I was into the events much before that. Yeah, I don't know.
So should we talk about our least favorite, and are they all written by Brian Michael Bendis?
It has no benefit of nostalgia, but it has to be Civil War 2. Like,
yeah,
for me. And yet I own every issue. In fact, I have multiple copies of some issues.
I sold all of mine cheap.
Yeah, I kept joking I was going to send them to
people. Sold $200 worth of comics for 10, I think. Just to get them out of my life.
they kept coming in like... loot box type things for me. They kept to be like, oh, and here's an issue of like Civil War 2. And then Forbidden Planet here does these grab bags of 4 comics for £2. And you can only see the front and back comic.
So all the middle ones were Civil War 2 issues.
Right, every single one was Civil War 2. I'd come back and they'd be like, oh, Civil War 2 issue, whatever. And I'm like, chuck it in the box, you know. So, yeah, I love. Oh, it was so bad. It was just. It's the thing is, it's a groundswell of there was bad things leading up to it. They wanted to get to an odd place for Secret Empire, so it was trying to do all this work in once, and it was just like, it was like no one cared.
I think one of
and it reads like no one cared. And, you know,
yeah, I feel like a little bit unfair on Bendis for this one, because I think he did get pinned with just like, you know, okay, turn this impossibly bad story, like, you know, this you get to this point that creatively is just going to be a horrible no matter who does it, but, you know, just do what you can, Bendis.
It's like, we need Iron Man off the table, we need I can't even think. That's literally, I can't think of anything good about this.
We've got a Captain Marvel movie coming out in a few years. If you could make everyone hate her before the movie even comes out.
I mean, let's do Civil War again, but make it over something stupid and where they have no. It wasn't like they're not best friends that you're making fight. We'll just have this whole thing about should you predict crime. I did like Ulysses. I did like the Inhuman that kicked it all off.
Yeah, sure.
I think for me, one of the most disappointing things for the event too was like, it's like if you like going back to those issues, they're drawn beautifully. Like David Marquez, I think, is the main artist on all of them, and it's like some of the prettiest comics I've ever seen. But you can't read it. It's just,
And look, we all tried. Like, we tried.
Oh, how we tried.
Like, you know, and the whole setup about Miles is going to kill Cap. And was that it? Was he was going to kill Cap? He was going to kill someone.
Yeah, I think it was Cap.
Yeah, on the steps of the White House. And
I mean, what it did to every series that had to tie into it, especially the Ultimates. Like, when the Ultimates start, it's Al Ewing writing this insane team of Captain Marvel, America Chavez, Black Panther, Blue Marvel, and it's like this awesome cosmic craziness. And then suddenly it's about Captain Marvel wanting to open a suitcase for like 5 issues.
It's so bad.
Yeah, that's for me. Yeah. Captain Civil War 2 and Age of Ultron, because the first Age of Ultron issue is really fun, and then, you know, you have all these beloved Marvel characters getting wiped out one by one, but then that just becomes a complete mess of like it's Sue Storm and Wolverine going back in time and killing people. Like, they want to kill Hank Pym, and
Yeah, that's a difficult one. I'm trying to think of any more that I just gave up on immediately.
Axis?
Like Civil War, I just dialed out. Yeah, maybe Axis I didn't love. Had a great title font, though.
Axis is just just a bummer because that's the last thing Remender ever did for Marvel. And after so many great, you know, his Uncanny X-Force, he did that excellent, what was his Avengers book that came out the same time as Hickman's Avengers run?
Uncanny Avengers.
Uncanny Avengers. That's a lot of fun too. I love that series.
I love Remender's cap.
Yes.
That's so good.
I think that's my last favorite Captain America run. Like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although I like Secret Empire, so I'm not.
Yeah, like, Secret Empire is far from the worst Marvel event. Like there's some great things that happen in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, but I like the run up to it, and I like the Sam Cap, which all came from Remender.
Yes, definitely.
Like, if Remender's run hadn't happened, you wouldn't have had the Sam Cap run. So, I mean, like, I didn't mind Nick Spencer's run on Cap. I think I don't know if it's a favorite, but it's certainly not. I certainly don't hate it like I hate some.
I love that final page reveal of Hail Hydra on the first issue. Like, what a great twist. Good. So great.
But you have to remember that he did write the Sam Cap stuff that came after Remender and Hickman. So there is a good Cap run. It's just Sam.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm giving him credit for that as part of his, whatever you think of Secret Empire. I think he did a decent Captain. I mean, there were some very clunky bits. Can't write kids, but which Marvel comic? Yeah,
also,
Marvel
not sure. Can. Not sure if he should be writing that many black characters without
he absolutely shouldn't. Yeah. There's some definite clunky moments about race.
Him, the eulogy he has to give for
it's really bad.
When Rhodey dies, that's right. God, yeah. That was. Oh, I forgot. That's how bad Civil War II is. Civil War II.
Yeah,
he kills Rhodey. And She-Hulk.
Oh, God, and She-Hulk.
Yeah.
And then Iron Fist.
We're still suffering. We're still suffering from She-Hulk.
Canonically heal people with his chi, goes in to visit She-Hulk and doesn't heal her. And then just later goes, oh, yeah, you know, I just didn't feel up to it right now. So like, it's just like, none of it makes sense. It's just like the whole event has you shouting at the comic. Like, but they can change that. They can fix it. So yeah, but
for other like least favorite events, I think, and this might just be more so for me, like the effects of the event, but when Bendis did Siege way back.
I like Siege, but I haven't read it in over a decade.
I think I was put off to it because when I came to it, it was like, oh hey, this is the reason that JMS stopped his Thor run, basically.
Oh, right.
And I love JMS's Thor run back in the day. And I think at the time, just reading it, and I was like, oh man, this is what stopped the run, even though Karen Gillan's was pretty good afterwards. And it was just had some like darker and grittier moments than I wanted, even though that was very much tying into the Dark Avengers stuff. Like when Ares gets ripped in half, I was like, oh, yeah. That kind of put me off a little bit.
Yeah. I'm remembering ones that I quite liked. Like thinking about Nick Spencer is quite. I like that he's got some things coming up for Marvel in the future because he did do some things that I quite liked. Like I liked the Assault, kind of semi mini event.
Oh yeah, Assault on Pleasant Hill.
Yeah.
That was really good. Mini events generally work out better because they don't get that sort of bloat and the importance and the spotlight
tie-in issues.
and the thing is, I think it's hard for them as well. I think it's like there's a weight that they have to carry if they've got those tie-ins.
I'm with you. It's fun when writers write something together and work on the same storyline together because you get, you know, different voices telling the same story.
You know that the same end point's coming and it's not just an advert for what they're writing next year. So, I mean, it's like, that's the problem is that you can tell when these things are organic and when they're not. And Civil War II is the absolute prime example of one that just was not an organic event. It came from nowhere. They had to introduce a new character in order to have a kickoff point.
Yes.
It's just so bad.
X-Men versus Inhumans, does that count?
That was
appalling.
That was bad.
I didn't read that one, but everything I've heard about it just sounds like the absolute pits.
And you know what? I have great fondness for some of the issues. I like some of it.
Right,
but overall,
Oh, like, isn't Lemire one of the writers? Like, it's bonkers. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah, and it's like, there's some good Iron Fist moments. So again, you know, but yeah, it's not great.
Avengers versus X-Men, I think, is like the peak of Marvel bloat.
Mm.
Yes. Well, I don't know. I think we might be getting there now, but
yeah, you're right. That's when they realized how fucked they could be.
I think then though they had an audience. I think comics were cheaper. People had more money. Mm.
Yeah,
I
you're
think
right.
Now
it's tone deaf. I think that's the reason, isn't it?
It feels tone deaf to have this many right now. And not just because of the pandemic, even coming up to it, but like when you're starting to charge like $5 to $8 for like the issue one of a run. I don't know. I mean, like everyone has limited money, but comics are really expensive hobby and increasingly so.
Yeah. I mean,
I think when you have sort of like 20, 30 comics that sound reasonable, it's even harder.
Every issue of Empire was $4.99 minimum.
Mm-hmm.
It's even though it's, you know, a $1 increase to what a book would normally be, that adds up, especially when you're paying converted, you know, prices elsewhere in the world. Like, I know it's quite difficult for you and I to get comics these days, Rebecca. I don't know. I mean, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and then you add the tie-ins to it, and it's like it's another kick. And it's like, that's why I think we appreciate that what they did with the No Road Home and what they're doing with Ten of Swords is, yes, you have to buy every single X title to follow the event. But there's no other X titles going on at the same time.
Sure. Mm. Yep.
So in the same way as they took all the Avengers, like there were like 3 Avengers titles at the time, and they just took them off and said, instead, we'll give you a weekly Avengers title. And so you won't have to buy both. You just have this one. I feel it's giving a little bit more consumer choice. Mm.
And even with the Ten of Swords stuff too, I'm sure there will still be issues that you can skip over, you know?
I'm kind of planning on it, to be honest. The groups I don't like as much, I might not buy and see how it goes with the first one I skip. Mm-hmm. And if it's skippable, keep doing that.
Yeah, X-Force is not looking too good for me purchasing it.
And yeah, I know. And I know people love it. And I think the nice thing about the X-Stable at the moment is there's literally a book for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we're already heading this direction. Let's end the episode with you telling me which X books I should and shouldn't read. And Jake, you can't just say all of them. So obviously the Hickman's main X-Men book, like a no-brainer. It's mm-hmm. it's so good. Just before the tie-ins to Empire, like Brew is one of my favorite X-Men runs is Jason Aaron's Wolverine and the X-Men, which is mm-hmm. a really humorous and sweet title. Where Wolverine has to lead the school for gifted mutants, and the gifted mutants he leads includes a Brood, who's a young dude called Brew, and he's just such mm-hmm. a great character. And he pops up now and then in various books, but he is now the king of the Brood, and that mm-hmm. he drops that just before the Empire event. So I can't wait to see what that leads mm-hmm. to. That's my favorite X-Men issue so far, I think, when that reveal. I just love that character so much, and it's such a cool thing to do with them.
I like all the domestic stuff at the Summer's house.
Yes.
Just like, so I just like, I like seeing superheroes chill out.
Mm-hmm.
So
I like all the thruple stuff we get with Cyclops, Wolverine, and Jean Grey.
I feel like they're baiting people, but in a fun way. Mm. Like, I mean, as in baiting haters, not as in... It's like, yeah, we're going to keep referencing to the fact they're clearly all sleeping together. maybe they'll make it slightly more explicit.
So what's the most essential after Hickman's X-Men run?
I would say probably, especially for Ten of Swords, would be Excalibur.
Yes.
Even though it's like, I know fantasy isn't necessarily your favorite genre to get into, and it is kind of like the X-Men fantasy.
I'm getting some character development. I dabble.
Just pretend it's manga.
Yes,
you'll be fine. I mean, like, to be honest, it is actually reminiscent of some of the manga I have actually read.
I love Teenie
Howard.
But
it's Captain Britain. You should.
Teenie Howard's great.
Absolutely.
She's an excellent
writer. She's like absolutely on top form with it. She's having fun. It's Captain Britain. You've got the... So you've got all this, you know, but you've got Betsy as Captain Britain and Brian's just rocking a cool haircut.
And a trench coat.
Jake will know. I'm slightly obsessed with Brian's hair and his new outfit.
Are you excited or fearful for when they introduce Captain Britain to the MCU?
Fearful.
I thought we were going to get a tease in that last Spider-Man movie.
Yeah, there's been a couple of teasers in the past. There's been like there was a nod to Union Jack in one of the films, and there was this hint of in Endgame if Peggy in the flashback had mentioned Braddock's.
Right.
I don't know. I think it could be done well, but I think it's going to be really different, and I'm not sure if people are going to be. It's very hard to tie in our Furiana with superheroes. Like, you can kind of do it in comics, but once you start getting, I don't know. I have concerns.
Rightfully so.
But we're getting Black Knight first, so
we'll
see how that goes.
Excalibur is that. Who's the main team? Is it Apocalypse?
It's Apocalypse.
Yeah. Brian.
Mm-hmm. So Brian's kind of like a side character a little bit. And then the other main
Brian's,
ones...
Brian's barely in it.
Yeah. And then the other ones being Rogue, Gambit, and then Jubilee. And Jubilee's son, Shogo.
Yep.
Who gets to be an awesome dragon when they go over to the Magic Lands.
Rogue and Gambit are still married?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
great.
Happily having hot tubs together.
There's
that's my second favorite, or maybe tied favorite wedding with Billy and Teddy, Marvel wedding.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that was another surprise one.
Because you thought, yeah, I mean,
so it should always have surprise weddings,
especially because it happened the same time as fucking Catwoman and Batman's wedding.
Yeah, that was.
Which I'll say, I hate that more than hilarious. Anything Bendis has ever done.
I read Batman up until that point, so that, and it's not that I mind them not getting married, I just had this disconnect of like, I just can't keep doing this.
Oh, you can listen.
I can't keep with teasers.
Listen to, like, you know, like 6 months before that, and I'm saying like, wow, I know, Batman's
right?
Never been this good before.
I was with you on it, and like, you know, and it really was. I feel bad that it makes it look like I was so mad that they didn't get married that I just stopped. But it wasn't that. It was the whole Nightwing being shot in the head. And,
oh, jeez.
I believe you mean Rick.
Yeah.
And it was like, it was really fun because Tom King was writing this really positive Batman. Like, things are looking up for him. And like, I should have known that the rug was going to be pulled out at one point. But like, I swear I have read Batman runs where, like, yeah, he deals with some awful crime, but like, that family back at home, it rules. You know, there's so much positivity there, working together. Like, there's, you know, him and Alfred's relationship, but like, Tom King just kept undoing all the things I like about Batman.
And then, that was I think after the wedding issue, I started realizing that they didn't have the rest of the Bat family, and I thought they'd come back, but no, they weren't going to come back, and it was just like, it started becoming a bit too self-important, and it's, again, it was down to cost at the time, but it was an easy drop for me.
I think that's also when he started doing that stuff where he was just like quoting literary works repeatedly through issues.
Yeah, we used each week anyone who's done an English degree, each week would just open Batman and like
Shakespeare.
How quickly can you guess the quote? And it's like, oh yeah, because Bruce Wayne really sat and read Tennyson and whatever. You know, like, okay.
Okay, so Excalibur is definitely a book I need to go
Excalibur,
and read.
And it's super important for Ten of Swords as well.
Well, it's certainly the book with the most swords in it, right? So
yeah, I mean, you've got the big sword fighters, but also, I think we're getting to that point. So, which other ones? I don't know.
Marauders is the one, Jake, you recommended for me to read.
Yeah. Marauders is just a lot of fun.
Kitty Pryde's book. Kitty Pryde's the only X-Men, or at least at the start of the series, she can't use the gates to get onto this, you know, the mutant paradise of Krakoa, which is a great, you know, the girl who can phase through everything can't get onto the island.
Mm-hmm.
And I love, like, the first issue, she has a broken nose for the entirety of the issue.
I love how much...
Rereading that first issue, I was just like, why didn't I stick with this? This is so good.
It is very fun.
It's very much like Kate's just like this massive hot mess throughout the entirety of the series. And that's a lot of fun.
Jerry Duggan writing this one.
Mm-hmm. Jerry Duggan and yeah. And I think the other highlight, because it's basically like Kate and then Emma Frost are basically your two main characters. Even though there's a fuller team, they're who gets focused on the most. And I really like some of Duggan's Frost moments. He
and
really
like
has a
big part of
voice for her.
Everybody.
Oh no, go ahead.
But, you can build on what I say here, but a big part of what I loved about Hickman's Powers and Dawn of X books was him teasing this like. What is it like? Almost like Knights of the Round Table. Like who's on the board of X-Men?
Mm-hmm.
And so once you have Emma Frost and Sebastian Shaw appointed, you want to learn who their Queen and Bishop roles are. And so this series is all about who gets appointed, or at least the first few issues are. It's all about who's getting appointed to the board, X-Men board for the AGM.
yeah, it's very cool. Got Lockheed in and Iceman.
Pyro,
so,
my second favorite Pyro. Australian Marvel character.
Yeah.
and I think there's some missteps that people have been pretty vocal about, which I think are totally fair about it. I think one of the nice things, though, is that they're also, for the first time in X-Men comics, they're taking a lot of queer subtext that has been with the franchise for so long and just making it straight up text, like in the latest issue of Marauders. I won't completely spoil it, but a character that has been alluded to finally has like an on-page depiction of their sexuality, and it's not straight, and that's pretty dope, you know, especially for something that's just been like hushed tones throughout the rest of the history.
And Iceman's kind of dating Christian.
Yes.
Not sure if they're actually dating, but
I am
kind of dating.
I've enjoyed what I've read of this series so far. I'm like 5 issues in, and it's so much fun.
Yeah.
I'm glad. So I'll probably read Marauders first, and then catch up on Excalibur. And then I've read the first few issues of New Mutants, but I should have kept with it just on the basis of my favorite cover artist is doing the covers. You know his name.
I'd definitely say
Mike Del Mondo.
That's the one.
Yeah.
I know, you know me. I don't know the names of any of my favorite things I'll say.
Neither do I. But the Hickman New Mutants issues are very good. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like the Ed Brisson ones probably are as well. I just don't like the characters as much, so I don't care as much.
Yeah. Where does this rank for you, Jake?
New Mutants after Brisson takes over is kind of like one of the lower tier ones for me. It might actually... With X-Force might be one of my lesser favorite ones. One cool thing is that they just announced that Vita Leia, they're taking over the book with Rod Reyes after the Ten of Swords event. So I'm super looking forward to that. That should be really dope.
I have to say, like X-Men is, if you want to read the most women in Marvel, read an X book, because I think it's the only time, like, it must be close to 50-50 parity, but they certainly, like, a lot of the main characters are women, and it looks like they just keep introducing more women. Like, you've got Teenie Howard, Leah Williams, now Vita, Aleia? Is it Aiyala?
Vita Aiyala. Strictly non-binary, but...
Oh, my bad. But
no, that's all right.
You know, it's that there are... a lot more different writers coming.
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely.
I'm
trying to think, but I'm not sure if you are. I was just trying to think how many non-white writers they have.
I mean, obviously there's plenty of work that needs doing, but it does feel like...
Yeah, but you know what? I think that's what I'm saying. I think Hickman has, using that kind of writer's room mentality, has used it to bring on a lot of new people. And they're not new, but like... new to be writing such high profile books. And giving them a lot of opportunities, so good stuff.
Jake, you mentioned X-Force being one of your least favorite, and that was actually the first issue of that. Professor X gets shot in the head, and I was just like, I'm not reading X-Books anymore. but that was before I knew that death doesn't matter in X-Men books anymore, which I think is a pretty ballsy and funny thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, ballsy is a gross term, but it's a very fun kind of different stance to take, you know, because death has been so important in X books. So many characters die in those books and stay dead, but death just doesn't matter now. So I genuinely thought, okay, you know, like, oh, well, how are they going to pull that that wasn't actually Professor X? But I presume that the next issue was them showing that, oh, death doesn't matter in the X-books anymore, and this is why.
Yeah, they pretty much...
I'm not sure if it was the next one exactly, but it was pretty soon afterwards, yeah. Yeah,
because their whole thing was like, oh, hey, we need Xavier to transfer the minds into the clones, quote-unquote. But they figured out, oh, Jean Grey is also a telepath, and it was right as rain.
So is that Jean's main book? Because I haven't read anything with her in it yet, besides the Dawn of Powers.
Kind of. She's also a key player in those giant-sized X-Men issues, which...
Should I read those?
I would maybe trade and just get like a trade collection, because like the artist's work in them are great, and it has Russell Dodderman does 2 issues for it, and his art is just always beautiful. As far as like it's not exactly like plot heavy. The Magneto issue is kind of so-so, and it's not necessarily
the one was the one the I was looking forward to.
Mm-hmm.
Was that good?
Yeah, the Phantom X, beautiful art. Mm-hmm. Beautiful art.
That one's great because it follows up on a lot of...
He's a low-key favorite X character for me. I think because of Remender's Uncanny X-Force run.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think it's a good one. It kind of gets... If you know where he's been left, you have to kind of know where he was at the last... You know, like with Professor X stealing his body kind of thing.
Where did that happen in? I read that.
Astonishing X-Men with Soul,
Astonishing.
I think.
Charles Soul's, think of which...
Charles Soul's one.
Yeah, that's right.
I read that.
As long as that's all you need to know before you launch into the Phantom X issue.
That's a Grant Morrison creator character, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's one thing that's...
all of Grant Morrison's characters.
That's one thing that's kind of neat about...
Where's Beak? Actually, Beak showed up in New Mutants. That was... And it was like the worst issue ever.
It wasn't a great issue.
Yeah.
And there's some good Doug. There's some good Doug Block stuff in the Storm one.
Mm, absolutely.
Cool. I think we've got Hellions, the Jim Zub book, which is only 4 issues in. Is that fun?
I'm not. There's people who love it, but it's not personally doing a lot
you
for
me.
You
have to like the team. I think like, you have to really want to see Maddie Pryor and Nanny and Havoc and stuff. The last issue was pretty grueling.
Mm.
Okay. I'll give it a while. Be wary.
Yeah. I mean, the good news is if you're going to follow Ten of Swords, you'll get to read a bit of each issue.
Oh, I'm reading all of this. You know what an idiot I am.
I know.
I've already reserved.
I count on it.
I've found what's still in stock at King's and like put all of it aside for me. So... shouts to King's Comics, where you can find all the comics that we've talked about on the episode. You can go to their website, kingscomics.com, or go check out their beautiful new store in Sydney. It's wonderful.
I'm coming over.
Yeah, come over. But I feel like we're winning in terms of most livable countries of our three right now.
I mean, there's the deadly spiders to get past, but yes, other than that.
Oh, when I say most livable, I mean most likely to live.
Yeah. Once they open up the borders on the U.S. again and it stops becoming such a hellscape, would love to get out of the country.
Well, that was a phenomenal hour 40 so far. Who knows how long it will take for us to wrap things up. But I know, Rebecca, it's nearing 2 a.m. your time, and I appreciate you staying for this. I felt comfortable asking for you this time because I'm very used to you being awake. At this
I usually there's 2 days a week where I'd be starting work in about an hour, so it's not too bad for me, and I'm planning on trying to sleep again afterwards, but I had a bit of a sleep before. So
Look, this was fun. I really, really enjoyed reading all of these Marvel books, and there's so many series that I either gave up on or never gave a chance to that came out in the last year that I'm looking forward to catching up on, and that's all thanks to you. I appreciate you both giving me the push I needed to restart my addiction. Because we all know I can have multiple addictions at once. That's my secret. I'm always addicted.
I have a list of manga that I'm going to read from listening to various podcasts as soon as I find my mojo back for reading. The pandemic kind of really hit my binge reading.
Oh, see, I'm the opposite. I'm reading and writing more than ever. You know, just because I don't know.
Yeah, I think people went either one way or the other. Because a lot of people I know said they just don't have the concentration anymore, and Fair enough, I'm finding that. So I'm countering it by reading the biggest novel I've read in a long time.
Alan Moore's. How many thousand pages?
To be honest, it's pretty much the same size. It's called XX, and it's by Ryan Hughes.
It's an X book. You need to read it before Ten of Swords comes out.
Can you imagine? He's the designer who designed the Multiversity map, other things.
Cool.
Yes, there is a comics connection.
Of course there is.
Yes, of course there is, exactly.
But look, I know that if anyone wants to catch up with either of you, the best place to do that is the Serious Issues Facebook group, where either the two of you, myself, or previous guest Connor approve, and also Siobhan sometimes as well, we'll be the ones approving or not approving your posts. Come and talk to us. Facebook.com/groups/Serious Issues Podcast is where we are. Way too much, but it's a good time over there. A great non-aggressive place to discuss all things comic books. But if anyone wants to find you guys elsewhere on the internet or in real life, where should we look?
don't come find me.
What's your address?
Come to Milton Keynes. I'm on Twitter as Arbitrary Genius, and that's about it.
And you can find me on Twitter at Krakoan Mimosa, and you can also find me sometimes on the Wine Mums RS feed. So I've been on some of their episodes, and I don't know if Connor mentioned it last ep, but I also might be on some other podcast they're doing. So definitely check them out. And
becoming a podcast maven.
I think they are. Yeah, it's pretty exciting. It's been fun watching Wine Mums grow and grow. Because Rebecca, you've done multiple episodes.
I have. I go and tell them what to watch on TV, basically.
Excellent. Okay, well, of course, you can find Serious Issues at facebook.com/group/Serious Issues Podcast. And if you want to support the show, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/Serious Issues Podcast. I believe Siobhan is coming back for an episode next week because I picked up a bunch of non-X books, but I'm sure she has a lot to weigh in on all things X too. So stay tuned. We'll be up. And I think Connor is going to join me. Well, I haven't even told them yet, but Connor, I need someone to discuss the multiple manga that I read every single night of my life now. And it may as well be Connor. Serious Issues. I'm trying to record at least 2 to 3 episodes a month. But as you can imagine, I'm juggling a lot of things, 4 other podcasts and multiple books, and I'm DJing again now too. It's a bizarre for not much money, but at least I'm DJing again. It's strange. Like I put up a photo of we have relatively low cases in Sydney at the moment. We had one new case yesterday.
Jealous.
And, I don't have to rub it in, sorry.
Please do.
But like, I'll put up a photo of me, you know, DJing at a bar or a restaurant, and the amount of people from overseas that are like, is this an old photo? What are you doing? And I'm like, oh no, this is kind of, normality is returning. it's a strange time, but I hope everyone listening is safe and reading lots of comics. Jake and Rebecca, thanks so much for joining me.
And
thanks for having me.
Let's do it again after. Is it called X of Swords?
It's called Ten of Swords. We all call it. I call it X of Swords, but I've just been trying to be good.
Yeah. Okay. Ten of Swords it is. We'll reconvene. Yeah. Maybe Connor and Siobhan. Maybe we could do a five person podcast.
Ooh.
Yeah. Let's have Siobhan.
Our own
as
quiet
well.
Council.
Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. You could pick a season.
What's the fifth season?
Quarantine.
Oh, perfect.
It is. It's Doug and Krakoa. I actually had an answer. Oh, my God.
Of course you did. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next time. Adios.
All right.
Bye.
Take care. Bye.
Serious.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.